Hello, my name's Brian Dwyer. This is Apollo Bay Radio's book show. How are you, Lee Kelly?
I'm very well, thanks, Brian.
And we're delighted to have back Monique Gillam. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Lee, I'm struggling on with burial rites. just hasn't been a reading week for me, I think, for some reason. Been doing other things.
Yeah, it's funny how things and like that happen, isn't it? You can just sometimes have weeks where you get nothing done, and other times.
Yes. And magazines too, which I'll talk about next week. Got some interesting magazines to talk about. But not much reading to report. I did start Umberto Eco's Numero Zero.
Oh, yeah.
I've got no idea what it's about so far.
Sometimes you hear writers' names like that and they're an echo, pardon the pun, from the past.
Because
he was very popular at one stage, wasn't he? And yet sort of just...
The Name of the Rose.
Yeah.
And...
I've read...
And I believe he's a postmodernist.
Oh.
well, I don't know. But anyway, clever. He's one of those very clever writers. You're not quite sure what's going on. Anyway, more about that later. Monique, as always, you have a stack of books with you. Tell us what you've been reading.
Okay, so I've got two books by the same author, Amy Zhang. One of them is This Is Where the World Ends, and the other is called Falling Into Place. They're not part of the same series or anything. They're unrelated in their plot lines. So the title is what initially brought me to This Is Where the World Ends. I found it really short, sharp, dramatic and curious. It gives away nothing, yet it somehow beckons readers to want to know more. This book was the first that I'd read of the author, and it didn't take me more than 20 pages or so to fall in love with her individual style. It had an interesting structure to it, with narrator perspectives being switched between the male and female best friends, each chapter altered from before and after. I found that the reader's patience and curiosity is definitely tested, as the event which this book is set around isn't revealed until around page 240. I was swiftly sucked into this book and found myself unable to stop thinking about it in between the moments I had to put it down, like for school and sleep. Other than that, I was totally reading the whole time. I would definitely recommend it to boys and girls alike, as it offers an interesting insight into people's natural built-in will to live and to sort after things that make us feel like this consumer-driven society which our race has built up around us isn't as superficial and shameful as it can seem. The writer presents the anger at the pressure to be a certain way and the frustration that a teen can feel from being misunderstood in a raw and concise way, while also exploring the strong tie that two friends can have to one another despite their differences. I came away from reading This Is Where the World Ends feeling it was a few weeks later that I read the Falling Into Place by the same author. This book has an unknown narrator throughout, which I found really curious, and I'd never read anything like that before. I have to admit that I'm really biased with talking about this book because I loved it, and I've got to say it's probably in my top five books. I don't feel I'll ever be the same again after having read it. Many people probably scoff at that, but that's how I feel. It discussed many ideas and questions that a girl can find herself stuck amongst. The writer gave readers this unfiltered insight into how anybody's life can look flawless from the outside in. She also encouraged her readers and treated as an adult despite still being a teen. The two reviews that were featured on the cover sum it up in very few words. By turns, sweet and vicious, steady and rattling, said The Hyperbole, which is a pop culture based site. The School Library Journal, which claims to be the largest multimedia reviewer of books for young adult teens, when I googled it to find out what it was, dubbed the book breezy yet powerful, an engrossing, thought-provoking story that will be snapped up by readers of Gail Forman, which is another one of my favourite writers. I highly recommend both books to anybody who knows a teen or young curious themes such as suicide and the judgment, prejudice and social divide of any and all high school students. Amy Zhang as a writer is able to discuss these themes in such a way that reveals the effects and consequences both ultimately have on bystanders.
They sound, Monique, as if they might be of interest to school teachers, these books.
Yeah, definitely.
Or, well, perhaps just general adult readers.
I found them really interesting, I think.
It's always an interesting thing, and it's obviously such a big issue when we're teenagers that we're forging that identity.
Yeah.
And I think there's a stage of a young teen's reading that you're probably past, Monique, but
yeah.
Where to suddenly pick up a book that has the inner life of a character is yes. really, and especially if that inner life reflects a feeling that you've had yourself.
Yeah, you can relate to, yeah.
It's yes. such a moment where you actually capture,
yeah,
you know, yeah. readers, and they can understand that a book can be more than just a form of entertainment, but yeah. something that plays on your mind and makes you reflect on your own life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. I really found that, like, it is just words on a page, but they really enticed me, and I kept, like, I had a vivid picture of what was going on in my mind as I was reading them. And even afterwards, like, I couldn't really shake the characters from my mind as though I'd kind of known them.
Yeah, that's a great feeling. That,
yeah, the writer's really talented to be able to do that.
The writer's Amy Zhang, Zhang. Monique, I'm so interested that you said that she'd inspired you to write. Yes. I think that's one of the hallmarks of a good book, that they get you going.
Yeah.
It's a model, perhaps, you know, which I find sometimes you can follow a model, you know, like I think all great art begins as imitation.
Absolutely. And also the idea that it's not so plot driven.
Yeah.
I think that's refreshing for a young writer, because everybody feels like they have to come up with the next great story.
Yeah, and a series of events.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the one that didn't reveal who the narrator was. You do ultimately find out, don't you?
Yes. I kind of actually, and I was pretty proud of myself for this, I figured it out before it was revealed, because it was really playing on my mind, and I was very tempted to actually skip to the back to find out, because I had a few suspicions along the way, like there's friends of the protagonist and bystanders at school who don't know her personally, but because she's like a popular girl, they have their own opinions on her. And so I sort of thought it was one of them for quite a while.
Worked. Why did she do that? What does it allow her to do that?
Well, I feel like it allows her to still give her readers like an insight into the inner habits and fears and dreams and all of that, but it also keeps it sort of neutral, so it's not like a biased standpoint. It's not the girl telling it how, like, making it a certain way. Mm. It's more of an honest insight.
Detached.
Yeah, yes. It's a detached, yeah. Mm. So, it was a really good book.
So I'm trying to figure out in my head how you can disguise the narrative.
The narrative.
Yes, yeah. The narrative. How do you do that?
I'll just tell you who it is, because then it kind of...
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So it's her imaginary friend from when she was growing up. She was an only child, and her dad died when she was very young. And her dad died because from falling off a roof, because she was on the roof with her dad. And her imaginary friend was on the edge. So the girl, Liz, screamed because she thought that her imaginary friend was going to fall off the roof, but instead her father did. So she blames herself for her father's death. So from that point on, she didn't have an imaginary friend anymore. So the outlook, the narrative structure that the reader is offered, and there's snapshots, and that's how I figured it out. The beginning of each chapter, there's a snapshot, which is like a flashback of her childhood, and that's why I sort of thought it was a childhood friend or a neighbour or somebody who had witnessed her sort of from day one growing up. But, yeah.
Amy's saying. This is The Book Show on Apollo Babe. Brian Dwyer, Lee Kelly and Monique Gillam with you. Tonight's focus, Lee, is crime. I'm not sure where it all started, but some people say with Edgar Allan Poe in the 1840s.
Yeah, well, Sherlock Holmes is based on crime, isn't it?
Yes, well, Sherlock Holmes, what would that be, the 1880s? And then, of course, that leads us to the British, famous British crime novels. I like the idea of the cosy crime novel, the Agatha Christie's. They're cosy in the sense that Agatha Christie never challenges the social order, the British class system.
No.
It's a given.
Mm.
It's represented as a natural thing. People who are polite are good. People who are impolite are bad.
And also the element of mystery, rather than through them all to find out, you know, who could this be, rather than, you know, focusing on the
horror of the crime.
The horror of the crime.
The gruesome stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the crime itself is kind of entertaining, isn't it? It's always a body in the library or, you know, something like that. But there's a little bit of philosophy. Miss Marple and Poirot are philosophers in their own right. They're always coming out with some pithy little aphorism about how one should live.
And a little bit moralistic too about...
Oh, yes. And Poirot, since David Suchet's incarnation on the TV, has popularised Poirot. He's such an eccentric character. A lot of fun. A bit vain, slightly ridiculous. Gets all his...
mind like a steel trap.
Yes, but gets his idioms wrong all the time. It's a lot of fun. I really, really like that genre.
I think it'd be a really interesting discussion to talk about whether or not that style of thing, that style of detective or crime can exist in print anymore, or whether it is just now television has
phenomenon.
Taken it over and can add that sort of, you know, like Midsummer Murders and stuff like that. They can add that extra sort of little cosiness to the scene.
Yes.
And, you know, that Angela Lansbury and Murder, She Wrote and all those. My mother used to love them.
Yes. Personally, I don't think I've read a cosy puzzle crime story for decades.
No.
Don't think so. Although I did read the new Sherlock Holmes. You know how they, the estate of Conan Doyle hired, what's the man's name? Awesome. I'll have to look it up. But to write a new Sherlock Holmes mystery, which he did.
Mm.
And it's so good. It's almost indistinguishable from the Arthur Conan Doyle's.
Really? Was it? Did it have a modern context, or was it put back in?
No, it was back in the 1890s or something.
Mm.
Was brilliantly done. I'll get the man's name by the end of the show. I'll look it up just for
that. Can be a bit fraught, that, you know, hasn't it?
Yes.
You know, the girl with the dragon tattoo. That they've got somebody.
I've got
to
his name here. I know his name. Yes, go on. I'll
I
give
think
you
that
his
they,
name in a
they,
minute. Stieg Larsson.
Yeah, Stieg Larsson. Wasn't there some... There was a horrible fight when he died. I remember that because lover or something had the last one on a laptop and the family were trying to get it. And, you know, but I think that they did talk somebody into doing a version.
Yeah. Carry on the series too.
Mm.
But Stieg Larsson... introduced almost a subgenre, didn't he? Like, it's the Scandinavian crime.
Yes.
Which, don't you love it on TV?
Yeah, they, well, that's another one, isn't it? That's
what is it about Scandinavian crime that's so good? I'm not sure what it is.
It's it's much slower paced.
Yes.
And it's much more, you've got to think your way through it and keep it in your head. It's not like an American one that is, and I mean, really, Midsummer Murders, you can figure that out. they're more challenging, I think.
Yes, that's right. It's not lightweight like the English ones. Yeah, and they're kind of dark, aren't they? They're always the most horrible people. And they're disguised in the general population too. So that we're talking about the girl with the dragon tattoo, the hornet's nest one, and the girl who played with fire. They're very, very good.
And they're of that that genre of crime where the characters are really important to the story, like the character that you're following. It's not the crime, although that is a mystery and you want to sort that out, but the character themselves really holds the story up with their eccentricities and they're certainly not the squeaky clean figure like Perrault.
She breaks the law readily, doesn't she? The girl, Elizabeth, with the dragon tattoo. That I was just thinking of TV, and Wallander's one of my favourites, and there's that other one with the woman, the couple actually, but Scandinavian, just wonderful. Now, we're talking about TV. There's a genre called the inverted detective, of which Columbo is the kind of best example, and that is where we already know who done it. It's not a whodunit because we know who the criminal is. And for the whole hour and a half of the TV show, the fun is just watching him get caught. I have never read a book like that, have you?
No, but I was thinking as you're saying that, I've just finished reading Emily Maguire's An Isolated Incident, which is a recent publication, and she's very interesting playing around with the crime genre, saying things like the one that you were talking about, the inverted...
The inverted detective.
That you know who did it, and the fun is finding out how he's going to get caught. Well, her view was that crime has focused too much on the detectives. She wanted to focus on the victim. So her story is basically about how the family cope after the crime. You know, how did this victim impact, and what has happened to this person impact on the lives of people around them, and not so much the detective, which is another interesting variation on that theme.
It certainly is. What's her name?
Emily Maguire.
Is this the book you read in a day?
Yes. Well, I did actually. I ended up, you know, you can sometimes get stuck waiting for someone and you can get really angry about it, or you can think,
read a book.
I've got a book in my bag. I'm off. And then I had to catch the train back last night, so I did another whole segment there and then just topped it off last night. But it's a great story. It's basically, sorry, I'm taking you off your track, but
no,
it's basically about
not at all.
A terrible murder that happens in a small country town somewhere halfway between Sydney and Melbourne called Strathdee, and I guess it's the equivalent about Holbrook.
Oh, wow, she's Australian.
Yep. Mm. But it's told from the point of view of her sister, Chris, and Bella, her sister, the one that's murdered. We find out about that straight away. She was the good girl, very attractive, whereas Chris, her sister, the one that's left, is really fiery, and she's had quite promiscuous life. She works as a barmaid. She's flirty, the story is really deals with the idea of how in small country towns, the attitudes that women, men have to women. and the way women decide to react to that.
Yeah, approach that.
Yeah, so really interesting. And it, she sort of touches on things like, and I was thinking of, you know, that terrible story about that ABC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jill Maher.
Yes.
And, you know, the marches and that that were held after her, they were trying to highlight this issue about violence to women. But she sort of takes this character and adds this down in the city, and they've taken the photos of her sister and are using them for their cause. She just feels like people are using her sister's story.
Glorifying it.
Yeah. And so it really muddies that sort of water about by the press, but also got it's got a lot of really interesting issues from the point of view of women and how they relate to men and how they use their own sexuality and how they use sex. Really, so it's definitely a crime story, but it's very it's got a lot of tentacles,
different themes,
going out into. Different things. So it was a real page turner, too. So I'd highly recommend it. I really liked it.
It sounds really interesting. That's Emily Maguire,
An Isolated
Incident. Yep. Speaking of Australian crime, we're both very fond of Shane Maloney.
Yes.
I just really like this. The this man's a Melburnian, Monique. His hero is Murray Whelan.
And he works for politicians.
He works for the Labor Party. Yeah. So it's a pretty seedy environment,
And the, just so you can imagine it, several of these have been made into TV movies.
Yes.
And David Wenham.
That's right.
Plays the character. So he is forever Murray Whelan for me.
Yeah. With a laconic sense of humour.
And that sort of bordering on chaos in everything that he does.
Yes. It's very funny because he's a single dad and there's this ongoing dispute about custody and his ex-wife has now got a much happier life with a better man and it's very funny, isn't it? Yeah. It all started on one of those miserable wet Monday mornings when, come 9 o'clock, half of Melbourne is still strung out bumper to bumper along the southeastern freeway. I'd just dropped my son Red at school, and as I swung my clapped-out old Renault into Sydney Road, the thought of all those Volvo and Camaro drivers stewing away behind their windscreen wipers brought a quiet smile. It was just that if God wanted to punish the eastern suburbs for voting Liberal, she wouldn't hear me complaining. So that's the opening to Stiff.
I think the opening to the brush off is having some tryst in the Botanic Gardens some woman, and he has to leave because there's been a body found in the moat at the art centre.
That's right, yeah.
So it's very local.
Oh, it's and very funny. Don't you like recognising places you know in books and films?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Shane Maloney, who's a very funny man, you know. You can get him to come and talk to your school. I heard him speak once and he said one of his favourite things is going to the private schools. Are they called private schools? You know, like Wesley and Scotch and Xavier and all those places, and telling them how rotten the education system is because it's too tiered, and taking their money
to tell them that.
He's a very funny man.
That represents another whole sort of subgroup of crime, though. That the bumbling, likeable. Yes. Detective, the one whose life is falling to bits, but they have this skill.
Yes.
Well, I'm not so sure Murray Whelan has any. He just sort of solves things by luck.
there's a kind of female counterpart in the Stephanie Plum novels of Janet Ivanovich, and which Kathy Donovan likes so much. She's read them all, apparently. And Stephanie's always trying to shoot her. Her car's always breaking down. She doesn't get paid enough. She can't stay on a diet. And, you know, it's always raining in New Jersey. And, you know, but she somehow gets her man. They're very funny.
Maybe that's why, if you do go into bookshops and look, crime is a huge seller, obviously. But there are so many aspects of it. Like what we've already touched on, like the Murray Whelan thing is fun, things that she wants to, and then you've got the mystery style of Poirot.
The odd couple in the detective novel.
Oh, yes.
Poirot has his Captain Hastings, you know. But he's always reliable, you know. He'll always chase down the villain for you, or he can always get the car going. You know, it's very funny.
Or he says something inadvertently that and the other character goes, oh, you've just solved it. And the audience is sitting there.
I love that odd couple convention. Before we just go to this break, Lee, I think because the police procedural has become so popular on TV, you're always, you know, following what the coppers are up to. And we know so much about police work now, don't we? Look, we know. Look at the things you know. Sometimes you even know what the code words are for various things. but you know about protecting the crime scene. Everybody knows you have to protect the crime scene.
Yeah.
Except, you know, police inspectors who always trot all over the, the footprints, or this is true in real life, is to put his fingerprints on the crime scene. But we all know about the chain of evidence, and we all know about the rights of the accused, and that's because of TV, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, forensic science was hugely popular at one point in schools because of the avalanche of shows CSI. Like CSI. And
yeah.
If only we did have that many gadgets and big budget equipment.
And the great forensic science novels are those Patricia Cornwell's. Mm. Have you read those?
That isn't... when I was thinking about crime, I was thinking because there are so many sort of little subgenres, if you like, there's many that I can't really
get
warm
into.
To. I don't like the focus on violence.
Yes.
And I don't like that too graphic in the detail about the crime. And I certainly don't like real crime.
You notice on TV there seems to be an escalation of the graphic violence.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's as if they've just got to top whatever they did last season. And as you say, I think people would enjoy it more if it was more character-driven.
Yeah, character-driven or mystery.
Mm. Yeah, the puzzle, like you said before.
So what do you watch, Monique? Have you got any interest in...
I don't watch a lot of crime, but my grandmother does on my dad's side.
Mm.
And sometimes she'll encourage me to watch it with her. And it's very gruesome, I find. Mm. And like one of my best friends, she's obsessed with after the murder and like dissecting from there the puzzle of the crime and all of that, which is interesting, but I find that when you see a lot of the gruesome details, I kind of don't really like that side of it. I'd rather be analysing the actual series of events that led
to it. I'd prefer that. There's a show called Castle, which I don't watch, but
I elements
and the bumbling writer, you know, and it's fun. You know, it's not as graphic as some of those others.
Yeah.
But see, that's another variation of it, isn't it? That's that forensic stuff. Like Bones isn't really about
the crime.
Oh, it has a bit of whiz bang stuff, but it's really that sort of the scientific, the precision. Yeah.
The aftermath.
Yeah, and the way you can learn so much from.
It's not about the personality of the offender or the detective, really, except that Oh, there's a little bit of play.
It has.
About it.
It did have the unresolved
fish.
Sexual tension, but I think they've resolved that.
Yeah.
They got married or something.
Yeah. How long can you sustain the sexual tension?
I think Hollywood probably has a definite time limit on that. They probably say, well, 3 seasons tops.
On the book show, Lee Kelly, we're talking about all kinds of genres. What's this one, Medea's Curse?
This is another Australian one that I picked up just by chance last year. She was the writer, Anne Boost, was speaking at the Geelong Regional Library in, you know, their Meet the Authors. They have some great things on there.
Yeah.
And so I went along and I bought the book. And when I was thinking about crime, I thought, oh, yeah, there's that one. It's very different. Anne Boost is actually married to, or partner of, Graham Simpson, who wrote The Rosie Project. And they're an amazing couple because you could not find a more different pairing of styles of writing. She's also, by profession, a forensic psychiatrist. So her particular take on the crime novel has been very coloured by that experience. So this one has, and there's just a second one being published in the series I saw the other day. This one has the main character of Natalie King, who again is one of those protagonists who, or detectives, you know, the central figure who is completely shatters all the stereotypes. She suffers from bipolar. Uh-huh. And she's on medication. She rides a motorbike. She's got some very funny sort of sexual proclivities. And but anyway, it's basically the story of she has all these clients, or she's had experience of clients who've harmed their children, and that's the link with the phrase Medea's Curse.
Yes.
You know, you can't give the story away, but it's basically she's being threatened and she's got to try and work out who it is that's threatening her, whether it's one of these clients or somebody different from her past. But it's certainly informed by her background as a forensic. Such people conduct their work, what they discover about the motivations for people who commit horrific crimes. So it's sort of one of those ones that gives you a lot of insight into, you know, an area of society that none of us would know anything about ordinarily.
Yeah.
So I found it really good.
It's Medea's Curse by Anne Buist. Is it B-U-I-S-T?
You say it, Brian, because you'll say it right.
Oh, well, Buist. I'll have a go. Is it scary? Because I've been thinking about what's the scariest crime book you've ever read?
See, I don't do scary very well.
Did you read Silence of the Lambs?
I watched it between my fingers at a friend's house, and then I couldn't sleep when I got home.
If you think the movie was scary, try reading the book at night. I couldn't read it at night. It's that scary. Not a lot of crime books are scary, but that really was.
I'm not after that experience of being terrified, really. I know some people are, and it's really, you know, the slasher sort of novel is another subgroup of crime genre.
Now, just to go on with a few others, do you like the legal crime novel?
Yeah.
The John Grisham?
Yeah, yeah, I don't mind.
Now, The Firm, did he write The Pelican Brief? Anyway, but you know the kind of thing.
Yeah, because they work on that principle too of you've got to be engaged, you've got to be working with the clues, you've got to be trying to build
a
sense of where this is heading, you know. Yeah. And so I find that far more engaging than corpses.
Yeah. There's always a hint that there's corruption is rife and, you know, they're kind of a little bit like conspiracy theory books, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, all those nice, respectable people are actually suspicious. Another one I like is The Caper, where it's about the crooks. you know, like The Italian Job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or The League of Gentlemen was another one, back going back to the 50s there, but where you're on the side of the crooks. Quite like that. Yeah, it's fun.
No, and also, you know, that's another perspective you can take on it as a social comment. You know, how do people end up in these situations, and understanding that sometimes what looks like choice to the outsider actually doesn't feel like choice at all to the person who's in that situation.
Yes, that's good. I kind of like the, you know, the sort of social realism of people. Four % of the population or something, professional criminals or whatever it is. It's pretty scary.
Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, it's – and for a lot of people, and this was the thing that was so interesting about The Godfather books and films, was that crime just seemed the normal, reasonable way to behave.
Mm.
What else were you going to do? What else were you going to do?
Mm.
And that's interesting. You know, The Godfather's a pretty interesting book, I reckon.
I think that idea of looking at the criminal lifestyle is quite, you know, an interesting area for fiction to head to, because I think that as a society we're often, you know, hugely judgmental of stories. And I think Annie Booth tries to do that a little bit with this, of stories that we read about of crimes and we think, you know, they're so dreadful, they're so sick, and you've got, you know, this people saying, you know, just throw away the key, and it's really as simple as that, and there's often, you know, a backstory that...
Yeah, more to it.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, I know that James Lee Burke's one of your favourites. Yep. He's got two series that I know of. There's The Texas Lawman, forgotten his name, but the famous ones, the New Orleans
man, Robichaud,
who's a current, he's a policeman, he might have gone part-time, runs a little fishing thing. I don't know why, but I really like that. There's so much of the novel is about him going into the kitchen and making a sandwich and then walking down to the bayou and checking the Cokes in the fridge, you know.
That's so true.
But it's really, you know, likeable, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and he's looking there and he's looking over the water and there's an alligator snapping and there's a kingfisher or something, and you think...
And then he'll see some lights driving up that shouldn't be coming up.
Yeah, up the driveway.
And you think, uh-oh.
Yeah, and luckily he's got a shotgun behind the fridge and another one behind the bread basket. But the thing I like about that is that James Lee Burke's a bit of a subversive man himself. He's very critical of the American political establishment.
Mm.
And it comes out in the novels that there's kind of a privileged class, especially in the Old South, and it's about time they got their comeuppance.
Yeah. And there's also the other element in that, I think, is that he's actually very good at creating that environment. And I'm always a sucker for that in a book, you know, where you actually are transported, that moment that where you're reading and you're feeling the heat or the mozzies or the, caught you know, you're seeing what they're seeing. And he's sort of really evocative of that sort of Louisiana, you know, bayou sort of area. I think that you know, the little fishing enterprise is key to that, because it you go to this sort of crime, but you've got this outlet as well.
Yeah. They're just great. If you haven't read James Lee Burke, I think it's one of your must-reads, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, hopefully that's what we're doing tonight, talking about all the different aspects of the crime genre. And that one, you know, it's American, but it's really well written and very... page turning, whilst also being interesting
characters. The characters are so strong, so well drawn. Now, I've got a question for you, Lee and Monique. Is Ian Fleming a crime writer? James Bond.
Yeah.
Is that crime?
No.
Loosely.
It's more about gadgets, isn't it?
Criminals in the stories. What about John Le Carre's The Spy Who Came In From the Cold or Smiley's People? Mm. I mean, traitors are criminals.
Yeah. Yeah,
are they
it
crime
is.
Crime novels?
They're more
not
like.
Really,
the,
are they?
I don't know how really. You categorise them. I absolutely love John Le Carre.
Yeah.
And.
And not just the spy ones, the Night Manager.
Yeah, I haven't seen that show. I'd love to see that. There's an element of criminal activity in them.
Yeah.
But it's more that sort of political intrigue, I think. I'd describe John Le Carre rather than crime. When I think of crime, I really think of, detectives and whodunits and
well, look, it's very hard to go past the old favourites. These are the hard-boiled. These are the guys who kind of invented it, really, aren't they? Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. Raymond Chandler, The Big Sleep, Farewell, My Lovely, and Dashiell Hammett, The Maltese Falcon. They were, for a while, just considered ordinary books, and then came Humphrey Bogart. And everything changed. And then everything changed. It's funny, isn't it? You get that a happy mix. Anyway, Raymond Chandler, I wish I had the other book here because it's got one of the greatest opening lines, which I'm just teasing you now, but it was something about a Los Angeles Friday night. There was the kind of kind of Friday night when the westerly wind comes in and housewives check how sharp the knives are. Something like that. But this is from Farewell, My Lovely by Raymond Chandler featuring Philip Marlowe, the original Private Eye. It was a warm day, almost the end of March, and I stood outside the barbershop looking up at the jutting neon sign of a second-floor dine and dice emporium called Florian's. A man was looking up at the sign too. He was looking up at the dusty windows with a sort of ecstatic fixity of expression, like a hunky immigrant catching his first sight of the Statue of Liberty. He was a big man, but not more than 6 feet 5 inches tall and not wider than a beer truck. He was about 10 feet away from me. His arms hung loose at his sides and a forgotten cigar smoked behind his enormous fingers. You wouldn't say it's literary, would you? But it's as the years have gone by, people have said, oh no, that is literary. That's a style of its own.
Yeah, it's certainly a style of its own. Like, look at the way immediately there is a character created in your mind, isn't there? Immediately he's got...
And an environment.
Yeah, some fearful presence. Quite a few of those are available in that, very cheaply in that Penguin Classics series.
Yes. And speaking of cheap books being available... The Apollo Bank Community Bank books sale is still on, and you can get books formerly owned by Kathy Donovan and others down there.
That's the best sort of book sale. Someone you know is a real reader.
We briefly mentioned the feminist crime books. Janet Ivanovich's, I'm not sure it's feminist. It's sort of so frivolous and funny that, perhaps a good feminist wouldn't like it. Sue Grafton, perhaps, because she's a bit more spunky and independent and capable. What about Kerry Greenwood's Australian one? You know, the one with, it's on TV with Essie Davis, Phryne Fisher.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And she's certainly a feminist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another interesting one because, see, that adds all those other dimensions because, I mean, I know people who like that just because of the clothes.
Yes.
And also the historical,
yes.
you know, drama aspect of
yes.
it. So, you know, crime is one of those genres that can take you anywhere.
Yeah.
You can go backwards, forwards.
Yes. I think it's pretty good on TV.
Yeah, I do too. And I think
yeah.
so that does beg the question a bit, then why is it selling so well?
Mm.
If there's so much, does the TV actually inspire people to go and read?
I think it does, actually.
Mm.
I think it does. Australia's a very literate country, you know, compared to other countries.
Well, it's interesting to watch that with, you know, the development of that, whether you go into bookstores now and while there are a lot fewer, they seem to be doing good trade.
Mm. Have you read the literary crime ones, Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky?
Oh, yes.
That is a very good book.
Yeah. I was too young when I read that.
Oh, we all were. You should save the classics up until you're 40 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You really should. Graham Greene's Brighton Rock.
Yes. And The Quiet American. And
yes, yeah. The Third Man. Now, that's a crime story.
Yeah.
What about these other ones that are just a little bit seedier? There's Bret Easton Ellis's American Psycho.
Mm.
I don't think you'd like
it.
It's just a bit graphic. But one of the ones I quite like is this guy, James Ellroy.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And, I mean, this is gritty, and I won't read the passages, but I have to say there's a language. Very, very crude words. Don't read James Ellroy.
I'd actually say that about Emily Maguire's book too. But maybe that's part and parcel of the genre. Like the people that you're trying to depict are people who are sort of living on the edge.
Yes.
And their language and their behaviour has to reflect that. So
yes, yeah. And the other one in perhaps that genre, although perhaps a bit more popular than James Ellroy, is Elmore Leonard. Elmore Leonard wrote Get Shorty, which became a popular...
Danny DeVito.
Yeah, a popular movie. And this one's pretty gritty. It's about very, very seedy people up in Honey's room. And, you know, it's a good... It's a seedy potboiler. Lee, we can't go without talking about true crime, which you don't like much.
No, I'm not a fan of true crime. I read something that someone said, I think it was Emily Maguire talking about her book. She's saying she didn't want to write crime as entertainment.
Mm. Yes.
And there is a sort of salacious element, isn't there, to the...
There is.
You know, when people write about the sort of Malat murders and things like that, I just...
Yes. There's no doubt that the serial killer books in both fiction and true crime are the best sellers.
Mm.
And that's...
Worrying.
A bit worrying. It is.
Yeah.
It's voyeurism, isn't it?
Yeah. However, maybe it's just that fascination people have with are criminals different to us? Mm. You know, like
the inner workings of their mind, their motive.
Well, one that's actually very good is Anne Rule's The Stranger Beside Me. Anne Rule was a journalist who did police reports, and she worked as a volunteer on a suicide line in California somewhere, and one of her co-volunteers a gentleman called Ted Bundy.
Oh, dear. He's famous.
Who was subsequently found to have murdered 32 women. And he was a friend of hers.
Mm.
This is really scary stuff.
Mm.
And she wrote about it. And it's really disturbing stuff.
Remember Hannah Arendt's line about the banality of evil?
Yes.
You know, everybody's fascinated by what evil would look like, and when they actually meet, it looks really ordinary.
Yeah, and it's something they never suspect it. Mm.
Yes. But look, my favourite true crime books are The Executioner's Song by Norman Mailer. Won a Pulitzer Prize for that. It's the story of Gary Gilmore, who was executed in 1976. He was sentenced to death, and then, as usual, the sentence was commuted, and he appealed against the
it being commuted. He wanted to be
wanted to die. Yeah, he preferred to be executed than to spend his life in prison. And the book's about, well, the whole series of events. It is a gripping read.
Mm.
And the other thing that's interesting about it is that Norman Mailer himself becomes a character in the story because, you know, he
That's shades of Truman Capote.
Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, which is a great, great book.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And that, you know, really, in some ways, Truman Capote is talking to us about why we are interested in crime because he's saying that, you know, you want to know how an ordinary person could do this, you know. And Helen Garner often talks about that as well. She there's a phrase of hers, she talks about how they sort of go through the thin membrane of, you know, civilization into the netherworld, you know.
Yeah. What a great metaphor.
What pushes people to do that?
Helen Garner's books. I've read Joe Sink's Consolation, and what's the one about the relatively local...
The House of Grief.
The House of Grief.
Yeah. And tries to get a sense of understanding of what went on here, you know?
Yeah.
Why, how is this possible that these people...
Yeah.
Were brought to this situation, and that I find that type of investigation, if you like, they're not really crime genre because they're really talking about investigating people who are involved in crime. Really fascinating and insightful.
The best writing is always interrogating issues and people, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's time for us to go.
We could crime on forever.
This has been the crime edition. Thank you so much, Lee Kelly. And on Apollo Bay Radio, that's 3abr.org. It will also be on the community website and on Apollo Bay Radio's Facebook page. We'll see you again next week, I hope. Thanks for listening and take care. This has been Apollo Bay Radio.